Welcome, folks, to another installment of Let's Weekend. This one is for November 13th, 2015. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. With me right now is Filippo D'Analfo. We're hoping that later Patrick will be with us in a little later, but for now it's just us two.
Yeah.
We are kind of unfortunately recording this show under something of a cloud because... yeah, there's that stuff that's going on in Paris right now as we speak.
Yeah. Really tragic terrorist attack over there that's just, yeah.
It's terrible, and it's unfortunate, and I hope that, you know, there won't be any more victims than are already set that have already been confirmed. Last I checked, it was somewhere around 140.
Yeah.
All I know is... although we Americans have the tendency to be kind of francophobic and kind of to dismiss the French as cowardly and such, the truth of the matter is that the French people are some of the hardest fighting human beings on the planet. They have done everything, you know, during World War II, they were one of the biggest fighters in the region. Even while they were being occupied by the Nazi government, by the Nazi Germans, they were still fighting their resistance. So they survived that, and they will survive that, survive this.
Yeah.
So, you know, vive la France, vive la République.
Yeah. Hearts go out to all the families who have lost loved ones today.
Yeah. But, so with that out of the way, we'll go ahead and get started with our usual hijinks. So, Phil, what have you been up to?
I've been listening to the book How Music Works by David Blyme, who's a front man for Talking Heads. It's a kind of an interesting book. So it's a little bit autobiographical, but mostly it's like how the actual production goes, how the business works. It's a lot of interesting stuff that I wanted to know. And it's a very, very interesting book. I recommend if you have an interest in music and how stuff like that works, to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond that, I've been, Patrick turned me over to the New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So
speaking of which, Patrick is on the show notes now. So.
Okay. So yeah, just bring him in and.
Okay.
We'll get to it. So I've been.
Well, you go ahead and do that and keep speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been watching Wrestle Kingdom 9, which is like 3 hours and 42 minutes of complete insanity. It's just, it's like I got out of pro wrestling because I found it, frankly, really boring, and there wasn't really anything too interesting to what the WWE was doing in recent years.
Not so with Japan.
No. No. From the, from the tag team clusterfucks to the just one-on-one matches that are basically just two guys beating the living shit out of each other, and they're not pulling punches at all here. Mm, they're just beating the crap out of each other.
Nope.
So
matches where they just replace the ropes with honest to god barbed wire.
Yeah, just because why not?
Random pyrotechnics going off in the middle of the ring, just
because.
Fuck it.
Yeah, just because Japan.
If there is one country that just goes all in with every single thing that they do,
it's
Japan.
It's Japan, yeah. And it's also kind of interesting to see how many, American and European wrestlers are over there.
Oh yeah, a lot of American wrestlers often sometimes get their start over there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like. Yeah, it's the same thing over there, sort of like, I guess, with it is music. You start off, you'll be big in Japan. Eventually, you'll be big everywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of music in Japan, we've got a little story about that towards the end here.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show. Yeah, we kind of started a little bit, but, I was just talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling and how just ungodly insane it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's like, okay, I kind of stopped last night after the Ibushi-Nakamura match, which was just ridiculous.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm I'm really enjoying it. I got about an hour or so left of that Wrestle Kingdom 9, and I think I'm going to go ahead and get the G1 Climax after that and keep watching that.
Yeah.
I don't really think you've got an hour left.
Yeah?
I think you've got one match, and then the rest of it's just Tanahashi mugging for the fans.
Oh. Okay.
Makes you realize that Rumble Roses wasn't completely fake fiction.
Oh, there is another Konami franchise that
we will never see again, probably.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Now you've made me sad again.
Yeah.
So
how about you, Brandon?
Let's see. I'm started replaying Xenoblade for obvious reasons. Because just quick reminder, Xenoblade Chronicles X comes out in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Exactly 3 weeks, actually. Yep.
Don't worry, I've already got the money earmarked for it.
Yep.
Yep.
And we're going to talk a little bit about Xenoblade and Xenoblade Chronicles X a little later on in the show.
Yeah.
But, I've been doing that. I forgot just how long and convoluted the tutorial on that game is, though.
Yeah.
But then again, it's a JRPG. I mean,
yeah, maybe that's why they're releasing the tutorials as videos beforehand for this one.
Yeah, I guess it's just inherent to the genre.
Hmm.
You know, the interface is going to be a little complicated, so they try to explain it to you as best they can.
Yeah.
They just haven't quite gotten to the point of not making it as obtrusive. But yeah, I've been playing that. I've also been playing The Room for PC. I'll probably talk a little bit about that on the Day Zero Layer, but basically it's a game where you have to go through all these puzzle boxes and mechanisms and stuff, and it's one of those things, it's, you know, right up my alley.
Yeah.
You know, it's puzzle boxes and, you know, it's, you know, trying to get all these mechanisms to work, and, you know, the mechanisms get more and more complicated as it goes, and it involves everything from like button presses and switches, safes, running marbles through little mazes and stuff. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's weird that you're playing it on the PC, though, because that game was originally designed for touch. So I don't know how that translates to the PC.
Well, they made it for PC, so
it
works just fine. I wanted to play The Room, too, but that's only for iOS, and my iPhone isn't quite up to snuff for that one.
Yeah.
So, but been playing that. Of course, I've been playing The Witcher 3 still.
Yeah.
Still going through that expansion. It's a good 10 hours, so. I have not gotten a hold of Rise of the Tomb Raider yet. I'm hoping if things go well, I can go and get it tomorrow. And I'll have some stuff to hopefully have some things.
And finish it in time for the Day Zero update.
Well, I doubt that's going to happen. Because, I mean, you know, Xbox, I got to install it first.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bet against you on something like that, but
yeah.
I forgot about the install time.
But either way, if I do get it, either way, I'm going to talk a little bit about it on the Day Zero.
Yeah.
If I don't, we'll just have to hold off on that.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? I've fallen back in love with Dream Theater.
Oh, yes.
An amazing goddamn band. I had forgotten how awesome they were, and then somebody played one of the songs from their newest album, and I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Yeah, and they got a new album coming out in February.
Yep. But, you know, obviously Dream Theater is known for having just an amazing group of musicians and putting on amazing shows. But everybody always complains about James LaBrie's voice, and you know, I don't know why, because it sounds just fine to me.
Yeah.
It's very melodic and powerful, and, you know, I guess maybe he just can't quite do it live, but then keep in mind he had that throat cancer scare a couple years ago, and I'm sure that did something. yeah. do it twice.
Well, any vocalist that can come out of that on the come out of the other side of that still able to do their job is
well, that's what took Steve Aggeri out. So,
If you ever get and I've also been listening to Mole Muzzler, which is one of James LaBrie's side projects. That first album is freaking amazing. Also been listening to Blind Guardian some more. You don't know who Blind Guardian is. Basically, imagine Metallica. You know, somebody take, you know, the speed and power and loudness of Metallica, combine it with sort of the noodliness and literary references from Iron Maiden, and then just the over-the-top production of Queen, and that's basically Blind Guardian.
Yeah.
They got a whole album based around the Silmarillion. It's great stuff. Let's see. Other than that, I've been, you know, reading a bunch of stuff, as usual. I've been reading, let's see here, what have I got? I've been reading The Neuropath by R. Scott Baker. I talked about him on the last show. He's the author of the Second Apocalypse fantasy series. Neuropath is sort of a techno thriller that basically revolves around a very sort of basic philosophical concept, which is the idea of free will. You know, does free will actually exist? Can we actually choose our actions? Or is it, as what neuroscience seems to be increasingly suggesting, that we are, in fact, pre-programmed by our biology to think and act in certain ways? You know, and basically what it is this guy who's like who's a psychiatrist who has a friend who's friends with this guy named Neil Cassidy, who is who is a neuroscientist who ends up at one point being hired by the NSA to use neuromanipulation to help capture and deal with terrorists. And at some point he's apparently left it and gone rogue, and suddenly there's been these people who've started showing up with the top of their skulls sawed open and, you know, little neurotransmitters and stuff stuck into their head to make them feel things. So it's pretty awesome, actually. Very fascinating, actually really scary if you think about it. Also from R. Scott Baker, I've also got a copy of The Judging Eye, which is from the Aspect Emperor series, which is a second trilogy for the Second Apocalypse. Still crazy shit. If you haven't gotten a chance to read the Second Apocalypse series, you really have to, because it is fucked up. I mean, it is great. It is well written, but it is fucked up. there's this major suggestion going on that there's this sort of eldritch race of abominations that are controlling, you know, stuff going on behind the scenes, and that they've produced what they call synthets, which are basically various races they created for the purpose of combat. One of which is this series' XP of orcs, called the Srank, who basically do not know how to communicate by any other way than violence and rape.
Okay.
Pleasant.
Yeah. That's the type of series we're talking about. I've been reading a book called De Wolver, which is a Dutch fantasy novel by Peter Schaap, which I've been reading both through my very limited knowledge of Dutch and Google Translator.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, but Peter Schaap, he was originally one of those sort of singer-songwriter type dudes that were really popular in the 60s and 70s, you know, like a James Taylor or Gordon Lightfoot type guy.
Right.
And then he, sometime in the mid-70s, he retired from music and became an author, and he's written a bunch of children's books and fantasy and science fiction novels for adults. De Wolver is part of the Wolver trilogy. And it's actually pretty interesting. It's kind of got the sort of standard fantasy quest, but it uses actual like Netherlander mythology. Like, not Norse-type mythology like you would get from, like, a, you know, from, like, a Tolkien-type thing, but, like, a straight Dutch myth and stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously is semi-related to that, but, you know, it's unique. It's something, it's a project I hope to, you know, I'm actually thinking of maybe you with the use of Google Translator, maybe actually translating this thing, but... That's a pipe dream as far right now.
Yeah, because you not only would have to translate it, but also, like, edit it for context and all that fun stuff. That would take a while.
Yeah. But he's one of those writers that I really hope at some point will get his work translated into English because, you know, he's kind of a big deal over there. And by all intents and purposes, from my friends who are Dutch, have told me that, yeah, he's actually a really great writer. So, you know, hopefully that'll happen. But that's pretty much what I've been up to. What about you, Pat?
Still following the NHL. The Colorado Avalanche did not get off to the start that they needed to, but I don't know. It's been weird. They've started to turn things around. They found a good line combination of what they're calling the nine line of Matt Duchene, Gabriel Landeskog, and Nathan MacKinnon, only for Landeskog to eat a two-game suspension off of a hit last night. So we'll see how that goes. Plus, there's all this, all these trade rumors surrounding Matt Duchene as of the last 24 hours or so. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
But that whole thing's kind of blown up. Also, I've kind of jumped back into the fantasy hockey, world. Back when I was involved in the GameSpot forums more than I've been in recent years, I was part of a keeper league that was operating out of there. And it was a lot of fun just having a roster and maintaining it year after year after year. So I'm a member of this huge Colorado Avalanche group on Facebook. And we just decided, you know, back in September that we should start a new fantasy league and a keeper league and just see where it takes us. And so far that's treating me a lot better than the actual NHL season is. I think I drafted really well, and couple nights ago my roster just had an absolute monster night, but it's what happens when you build from the net out, I think.
Yeah.
And then I've also fallen down the same New Japan hole that Phil has.
So no, it's your damn fault,
it is,
man.
It is. It was recommended to me just off the cuff. I was bored one night and checked it out, and then, yeah, it just pulls you in. It's just a fantastic product, and I'm thoroughly enjoying what I'm seeing of it.
Yeah.
Japanese wrestling, dude. Now you understand why, you know.
They value the performance art aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now you know why Ken Akuman is so popular over there.
Yeah, we got Wrestle Kingdom 10 coming up in January, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's January 4th every year, regardless of what day of the week it lands on.
That's weird.
I'm not sure what the significance is of that date, but every year.
I wonder if we'll be able to get it
here
this year.
Reminder, folks, Japanese wrestling, replacing ropes with barbed wire.
Yeah, they do that sometimes. I haven't seen it in
sometimes, though, or sometimes.
In New Japan, there are other promotions that will do that, though.
Not only will they replace it with barbed wire, but they will also take that barbed wire and run an electric charge through it.
Yeah, I suppose that has happened.
Yeah, I'm not making that up. Look it up on YouTube.
Yeah. You too.
And it was a women's wrestling match, too.
Yeah.
All right.
I remember one time this was a few years ago. It was over here. They were supposed to use barbed wire, but I guess whoever they sent out to shop for it got razor wire instead.
Oh, that didn't go well.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah, and the Rock goes for the ropes. Oh, he's in three pieces.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
All right.
But no, this isn't so much that sort of thing as it is just every match being stiff as a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely that. Well, some of the tag matches were pretty elegant, even though they were like,
yeah,
chaotic.
Phil told me that, you know, this isn't like play fighting. I mean, that it's technically play fighting because obviously it's scripted beforehand, but they're still really beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, it's strong style. They are beating the actual shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Like there are the three, there are sort of three layers of it. There's what you see over here, which is by and large just
it's a show.
What we said play fighting. Then there's what they might call stiff, which is you're making everything connect to put on a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that over here, generally you'll kind of be regarded as a douche, and not a lot of people will want to work with you. And then the next layer after that is called strong style, and that's what New Japan's completely based on. And that's when, you know, everything is still predetermined, but the matches are largely improv, and the guys are beating the actual shit out of each other. So,
yeah,
kind
of makes the wrestlers over here kind of look like pussies.
Yeah,
well, that's why I can't watch it over here.
Yeah, well, I mean the that Suzuki Sakuraba match only ended when Sakuraba passed out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, occasionally you'll get guys like Mick Foley who will do just insane shit,
yeah.
But, you know, that's why Mick Foley is kind of considered extraordinary,
yeah.
At least over here.
Yeah.
He's also an embodiment of human goodness, I'd also like to point out,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's actually one of the nicest guys on the planet.
Yep.
This is a guy
who doesn't stiff people either, is he?
No.
Well, he's retired now, so...
Mm.
Yeah, he retired, I think, about a decade or so ago.
Yeah, officially, anyway.
The reason was because one of the injuries he sustained from one of his infamous extreme matches.
Yeah.
It knocked out his knee, and now, you know, he is medically prohibited from wrestling professionally anymore.
Yeah.
At least not, you know, like, I think maybe he'll do stuff for charity on occasion, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I thought I read something somewhere that he was getting into stand-up now.
Yeah, he's actually not bad, too. He is a very multi-talented individual, I will tell you.
Yeah, he's a pretty good writer, too.
Yeah, he's a great writer. He's gotten a bunch of biographies and a couple of novels and some children's books. He's written some comics. Yeah, he's a... Yeah, and... You know, and I mentioned about, you know, his being the embodiment of human goodness. One of his things he does a lot these days is every Christmas he goes around children's hospitals as Santa Claus.
Yep.
You know, it's like
probably be the easiest job ever for him.
Yeah,
because he already kind of looks like a young Santa.
Yeah.
But all right, so we're gonna move on to our now weekly segment, which is Brandon's Random Factoid. I totally need some theme music for this. Seriously.
Yeah.
I will, of course, begin with the caveat, as usual, that it is the nature of trivia that some of this might be complete and total bullshit. But nice. At least with this one, I can say that there's a lot of historians, both ancient and modern, that attest to this. Okay, so we all remember that movie 300, right?
Right, I do.
We all saw, well, I saw it.
I remember its existence.
Yeah. It was a really stupid movie, but it was an entertaining stupid movie.
Yeah.
One of the things, of course, the historic Spartans were, of course, pretty hard people, known with a very uniquely stratified society. A lot of their citizens were professional soldiers, and, you know, their sort of philosophy sort of went to everything in their lives, including what they ate. And, you know, Spartan soldiers were famous for having a very lean, very athletic physique. So you're probably wondering, when they were out in the field, what was it that Spartans actually ate? Well, I can tell you. Spartans primarily ate something called the melas zomos. In English, that translates to the black soup. Now, you're probably thinking, Brandon...
This isn't going anywhere good, is it?
Well, the thing, you're probably thinking, Brandon, that sure does sound really ominous. Tell me more. Okay. Basically, what this was, is this was a soup that was made out of pork. Well, four major ingredients. Pork, salt, vinegar, and its primary ingredient, pig's blood. Lots and lots of pig's blood.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably thinking, oh, that sounds nightmarish. How did it
Of all the parts of the pig they could have used.
Yeah, well, I mean, they already used other parts of it, so.
Yeah. And you're thinking, so that sure does sound horrifying. How does it taste? Well, there's historical records of a man from Sybaris who was a... Sybaris, of course, being a city in southern Italy that was infamous for its luxury, once tried the soup once and said, and I'm quoting here, "Huh, now I know why the Spartans do not fear death."
Yeah.
Now, in all seriousness, they didn't. They usually often added stuff like, you know, onions or herbs or stuff that they could forage around for. And usually they would eat it with stuff like, you know, cheese and dried fruits like dates. So they didn't just subsist entirely on the soup. They had other stuff that they ate with it. And for the record, actually, as far as flavor goes, if you go on YouTube, there's actually a... Go on YouTube and type in Spartan black soup. There's a couple of Canadian students who are Slavic in origin who actually prepared a modern version of this soup in which they used all the basic ingredients, pig's blood, vinegar, salt, pork, specifically pork legs. They also added onions, and just for the rec, just to make it more of like a stew, they also added some potatoes, which is the one unhistorical ingredient that they used. And they also used some herbs that would have been historically accurate. And after they cooked it and tried it, they said, it's actually not that bad.
Yeah, well, it really shouldn't be.
Yeah. Keep in mind, you know, blood soups are actually pretty common in Europe. You'll find them, you know, in Italy. You'll find them in the Philippines and France.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
It's actually, you'd be surprised, but blood is actually pretty nutritious. It's got all types of vitamins and stuff.
Just ask the vampires.
Yeah. So it makes us realize that apparently the Spartans either knew something or they were all vampires.
Or both.
And that has been this week's edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. This edition of Brandon's Random Factoids has been sponsored by Taco Bell. Taco Bell, we've been impacting your colon with dried up ground cow anus since 1962.
Yeah. Okay, I don't really know how to follow that.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just go on and mention that, we talked a little bit about the Expanse last week.
Oh, yeah.
And now we have solid date that we're going to be able to watch this in like 2 weeks, pretty much everywhere. So on sci-fi.com, YouTube, Facebook, where else? iTunes, Amazon,
Hulu,
Xbox, yep. PlayStation.
You notice that there's something clearly missing there, don't you?
Yeah, the sci-fi station itself.
Yeah.
They have to wait for December 14th.
For some weird reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah. All I can tell you is, I'm totally, totally stoked for the show. I want to see if they've managed to do a good job. Because that book series is just so enjoyable.
It is. It's like, it's two of my favorite genres combined in one. It's, you know, space opera and detective fiction.
Yeah.
Round up into a single story. And, you know, it's based around, you know, concept that I think is completely possible. which, you know, is the idea of, you know, colonized Mars and a colonized Earth, and there being like a secession war or something like that.
Yeah, the conflict between you know, Martians and the Belters,
and then of course there's the Belters, which of course is a space colony.
Yeah, they do primarily do, you know, mining of ice and all that fun stuff over there.
And they named their new nation the Republic of Zeon.
Yeah. Just because why not?
Sorry, it just it's when you, it sounds so familiar, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Technically, you know, they've been doing that since, like, you know, Robert Heinlein and stuff. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just I remember reading the book and hearing about that, and I'm like. It just it's what popped into my head.
It's kind of hard not to.
Yeah, but yeah, the book series by James S. A. Corey, which is actually a pen name used by two different writers, Daniel Abrams and or is it Daniel Abraham? I can't remember.
Daniel Abraham,
and what's the other guy?
that other guy.
Yeah, that other guy. Daniel Abraham is actually a really great writer in his own right, too. Yeah. He's also, you know, he's been one of J.R.R. Martin's, George Martin's assistants for the last few years.
Yeah,
he's been the guy in charge of writing the Game of Thrones comic books. Hmm. So, but, yeah, I'm actually very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I gotta admit, we are sort of living in sort of a golden age of, you know, sci-fi fantasy adaptations right now.
Yeah.
Because we got this, we got Game of Thrones, we got this, we know there's stuff like, we know Ready Player One is being made into a movie, is in pre-production. We know that, you know, stuff like Good Omens and stuff.
Yeah. We've had, let's see, what else have we got? Well, the Magician that is being adapted for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Childhood's End.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot about that.
They already made that one. It was called V.
Yeah, but now they're actually making the real one.
Yeah. Little known fact, V was actually originally supposed to be an adaptation of Childhood's End.
Yeah. Didn't quite work out that way.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
We'll both be watching this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, Pat?
Yeah. I think I'm just going to step back on this one because I don't really have that
close. Yeah, I'm going to go stand over here and we're just going to let Patrick babble on for a while.
Well, that's, Brandon, did you not get to check it out? Or
I got to check out a little bit. I got the gist of it.
Okay.
And, just go ahead and explain it for those who don't know.
Yeah, the thing was, okay, so basically I've been getting back into watching anime lately, and a lot of it's been stuff that's featured in Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax, because I'm currently writing the review for that.
Remember, folks, Dengeki Bunko is Dengeki's light novel division, so... Shimonetta was originally a light novel series.
Well, no, Shimonetta wasn't featured in that, as far as I'm aware.
Oh yeah, but that's just a matter of
I was about to say I'm finally moving on to other stuff besides what is featured in there.
Okay.
And that, you know, that brought me to Shimonetta, which can't remember exactly how I discovered it, but
it, and now he won't shut up about it.
Yeah,
it is worth talking about, though. So.
Yeah, it's hard to describe in brief, but I guess the easiest way to say it would be it's a high school slice of life anime comedy set in the world of Demolition Man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Basically, everything is very highly censored. That's media content,
censored, all the way up to sanitized. made ultra PC, I guess.
Yeah, and don't fuck with the vice cops in that world because. Yeah. Like, literally, the opening scene is a bunch of kids getting hold of dirty magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, military police swoop down on them.
Yep.
And so.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, that's that sets the tone for the entire show. And the. The overall. The overall story is about characters that are trying to sort of break through all this censorship and all this. Like, there's not even any real sex education.
Nope.
Which, like, to a point that made the show less entertaining to me, knowing that there are people actually trying to make that happen in this country and in some places succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically a group called Sox, and they're trying to distribute materials around their city, and overall, it's part of a larger scheme to bring down the censorship altogether. And
mm-hmm.
some of them are just doing it for laughs. Others, more or less want people to not be stupid anymore.
Yeah. I think this was, in some ways, I think this is part, this series was in part a sort of reaction to what's been going on in the anime and manga world over the last 15 years.
Or more specifically, in the last five.
Yeah. If you've ever read old manga, manga's always been kind of crazy, especially when it comes to what we would consider perhaps inappropriate for children. But if you go back and read manga from like the 70s and 80s, it was much, much crazier back then than it was here. For some weird reason, for almost like 30 years, parents in Japan more or less just did not give a shit about what the manga their children were reading. And then at some point in the early 90s, there was this serial killer they called the Otaku Killer who started kidnapping and killing little girls. And once people figured out that he was a manga fan, all of a sudden all the parents realized what their kids were reading. And now you get this.
Sounds familiar.
Yep. But yeah, this is especially now that, you know, we're in the internet age now, and there's more, you know, Japan is no longer, I mean, obviously ever since World War II, Japan's been much more open, but now with the internet, they can't be as isolated now as they used to be. So now, you know, if something shows up in a manga that might be offensive to a certain ethnic group or foreign group, it becomes a major story. And, you know, then the publishers come back and they have to deal with it and, you know, shit. Yeah, basically, you know, this is sort of what that reaction to it is.
Thought through to a logical conclusion.
Yeah. And it's also got to do with the fact that, you know, for a while now, the manga publishers, especially for like children's manga, have been trying to cut down on the violence and sex in their manga. It's amazing to realize that, you know, something as extremely violent as JoJo's Bizarre Adventure was, you know, published in something like Weekly Shonen Jump for almost 20 years.
Yep.
But yeah, this is sort of a reaction to that. When you told me the story about this, it originally reminded me of like an old Go Nagai series. Because back in his early years, that was sort of his bread and butter. Stuff like Horenshi Gakuen and the Akumara family and, you know, all that stuff was involved about the basically making fun of sort of Japan's culture of shame and everything. And you'll probably know the establishment really did not like it. In fact, when he was... Yeah, when the controversy for Horenshi Gakuen got so bad, he finally had to end the series against his will. So what he did is he had the PTA, like, form up an army, and then all the characters from Horenshigakuin, like, go into a battle and then just kills off everyone in the franchise. Yeah.
That's one way to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, the good thing, though, is that, you know, eventually he had the last laugh because he pretty much ruled, you know, anime in the 70s.
Yeah.
But there are... it is definitely a show that I can recommend, even though I have trouble describing it in detail.
It's not just all, like, fan service and stuff. There is, like, a genuine message behind it.
Yeah. And, you know, the parts of it that are comedy, which are many, are hilarious. There is a bit of sort of sad news about that series. Voice actress Miyu Matsuki, who had the role of Anna, the I guess I could say unstoppable killing machine of a class or a student body president,
yeah,
passed away about a month ago due to complications from pneumonia.
Yeah, I read about that. I think I saw that on the Anime News Network.
Yeah.
And on a Senkaku Complex, too.
Yep. She had a whole host of other roles. She was actually really prolific. She was Hisui in Melty Blood.
Yeah.
Kuko in Yaruko-san. And
she was a fairly popular seiyuu over there.
Yeah.
Basically. And, many otakus cried that night. Yeah.
And she did turn in a great performance as Anna in Shimonetta.
Oh, yeah. That's unfortunate. I'm hoping some point this series will make it over here. Because
it would be interesting to see how it would be received over here.
Well, if they loved Kill la Kill over here, they'll definitely like that.
Yeah.
Although the thing is, I will admit, is that some of the jokes are very Japan-specific.
Yeah.
One of the main ones they bring up is about that pool.
Yeah, which if you're not steeped in Japanese culture, you wouldn't really get it.
Yeah, Pat explained that one. The pool.
Is that the one where the same pool appears in like every porn that?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this sort of indoor swimming, athletic swimming pool in this high rise, I think, I think it's in Shibara, that for whatever reason gets hired out by all these Japanese adult film studios, and basically just about every Japanese porn that involves a swimming pool ends up there.
Well, they probably own the building.
Yeah, they probably own the building. But if you've ever
seen... It's kind of like that rock quarry that you know that Toei owns.
Yeah. Basically, if you're ever watching a Japanese porno and you see an athletic swimming pool indoors with a sunroof coming up from the left corner,
somebody's getting laid.
Yeah, someone's getting laid. That's that pool we're talking about. Yeah. It actually became so common that it's now an in joke in a lot of anime and manga.
Yeah.
And it's probably a petri dish of God knows what by now.
Chlorine, dude.
Ooh.
Chlorine.
Yeah.
Evolution.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. But I would not be surprised if there's some sort of...
If there's going to be any, like, microorganisms that chlorine can't kill, they're going to be born there.
Yeah. For all we know, whatever's born from that pool could be the basis for a whole new anime series.
Yep.
That one's free, folks.
Yep.
Wow, I really...
No, it isn't. Pay up, bitch.
This show just went to a really weird place.
That's kind of what this show is for.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is for the show where we can talk about the stuff we can't talk about on day zero.
Yeah. Yeah. But yes, Shimonetta. They have cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shimonetta. They have cookies.
Makes me wonder with Netflix looking to get into anime, if maybe they, instead of doing originals, if they don't localize some of the more popular ones that other studios haven't done yet.
Well, with the cash they got, they can definitely afford it.
Yeah. It's just an interesting...
I mean, Netflix pretty much owns the world right now, so...
Yeah, well,
they could just buy up all the anime.
Yeah, they
just
could.
All of it.
All of the anime.
Yeah. All of the anime.
There's a considerable amount of anime already on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. See, they're already well on their way.
Yeah. I don't know. I know they're rich, but they still can't be like a pimple on Kadokawa's ass, can they?
Well, if they can bankroll like a show like House of Cards that, you know, is doing really well, they can probably afford that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Kevin Spacey doesn't come cheap.
Nope. Kevin Spacey does not come cheap.
Nope.
Alright. Alright, this next one's mine. Okay, I need to tell you a little bit about this really awesome sci-fi graphic novel that's going to be coming out later on this month, called The Eternaut, or as it's known in its original language, El Eternauta. Basically, this is a science fiction graphic novel that originated in Argentina. It was originally serialized in this sort of comic book called Horacera, which was a Argentine comic that they would put in newspapers. For a long time, it was the big major comic book in that country. Basically, what it is, and I promise this will pay off in a little while, because it not only is this story important, but the people behind who made it is kind of a big deal. Okay. Basically, what this is it's a story about. Well, it starts off with the writer of this comic strip, who I will get to in a little bit, working at his desk when suddenly this guy named Juan Salvo suddenly appears in his office out of nowhere, and then Juan Salvo then tells this absolutely insane story about 10 years. Ahead of when the story is written, Juan Salvo and a bunch of his friends are at a friend of his house when suddenly most of life in there, well, suddenly what happens is that the sky becomes dark and they're buried under this huge amount of sudden snow. Now, their first thought is that they've got all this snow, it must be a nuclear winter. Because eventually they find out that like half of life on Earth has been wiped out. And so what happens is that Juan Salvo, he sort of puts together this sort of makeshift protection suit made out of scuba gear, and he goes out into the world trying to find out what the hell happened. Well, he finds out what happened is that there was no actual nuclear winter. What killed everything was the actual snow itself, which is really, really toxic and kills everything it touches. He finds out that this snow is, in fact, something created by these alien invaders who, you know, being smart for once, decided to have their work done for them while they were far off, you know, in the distance, away from the action. So eventually what happens is the aliens do actually invade. They employ these sort of insect-like stormtroopers to impose their will on people. They start having collaborators from Earth's governments. And so Juan Salvo, he gathers up all his friends and they start a sort of resistance movement against the alien invaders. And eventually it grows to a sort of global conflict. Now, you're probably, you know, if you know anything about the history of Argentina, some of this probably starts to sound a little familiar. In fact, if you go to Latin America, you'll see Juan Salvo on, you know, things like, you know, graffiti and murals and stuff, usually alongside stuff like, you know, Simon Bolivar and Che Guevara and stuff. Well, there's a reason for that. The guy who wrote this comic was a guy named H.G. Osterhild. He was an Argentinian writer of German descent who, on top of writing a lot of comics, and he was pretty prolific, he was also a pretty famous, iconoclastic essayist and very sort of anti-authoritarian journalist who, if you know anything about the political nature of Argentina, meant that he had to move around pretty frequently. And then in the 1970s, Argentina got, you know, had one of those military coups that they're apparently so fond of. And suddenly, you know, there was this military junta that took part, that started taking up what they call, what lots of people around the world call the Dirty War, which is where they just sort of started this campaign of state terror where they basically found, rounded up every kind of dissident, you know, especially anybody on the political left, and had them, quote unquote, disappeared. Well, by the mid-70s, Osterheld and his family had become members of the Montoneros guerrilla organization, which was a left-wing guerrilla warfare group that was one of the primary modes of resistance against the military junta. And then in 1975, all four of his daughters and their families were disappeared. And then eventually they finally came for Osterheld himself. And as far as everyone knows, he was eventually, no one had seen him since 1977. He apparently had been in internment camps for 2 years after that, at least until 1979, when he was, where he's believed to have actually died. People who survived this dirty war who saw him in those camps said that he was more than likely tortured to death by the AAA right-wing death squads. So because of that, if you read El Eternado, you start to see the parallels and sort of the sort of, it was it, that in what was really a sort of a sci-fi adventure story was really more of a sci-fi allegory of what was going on in Argentina at that time. And sort of meant to be a call to action from the people. Although the truth of the matter is, that is probably one of, this particular comic is probably one of the reasons he ended up basically getting killed by the junta. The other reason is he all, on top of, you know, being a member of Montoneros, he, one of his projects he did in the 60s was a comic book biography of Che Guevara that he made for the Chilean market. And a lot of people believe that's the that in particular is the reason why he was finally captured by the junta. But Fantagraphics has the rights to this comic, and they've translated to English, and it's going to be published, released for reading here in the U.S. on the 23rd. So if you get a chance, give it a good read. It's one of the most important comics ever written. It's a major part of Latin culture, and you'll sort of understand why after you read it.
Good tip.
Yeah. And I'm serious about, you know, the graffiti stuff too. If you go to Argentina, you'll see Juan Salvo just about everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, if there are murals or any type of stencil graffiti, he shows up in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something a bit more, a bit lighter to help us close the show with.
Yeah. The latest Xenoblade Chronicles X trailers.
Yeah. These are looking really, really good.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen these, Pat?
Were they on the Nintendo Direct?
A shortened version of the first one was.
That's what I saw.
Yeah.
Because the one I got linked to is the one where they're describing what you do with the scales.
Yeah. These are basically, basically they've released a series of, I think five or six, what amounts to tutorial videos.
Mm-hmm.
Basically going over the entirety of, like, how the systems work and all that good stuff. In advance of the release of Xenoblade Chronicles X, which I think is kind of an interesting way of handling it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, get people interested in seeing what they're in for, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Phil, before we started the show, he started He actually watched it, so Phil regale Patrick with tales of the scales.
Well, I don't know the original Xenoblade because I didn't play it at all, so I don't know how much of this is new. But it's
completely new.
Okay, well, it seems like a pretty comprehensive system. I mean, you got three classes of mech, light, medium, heavy. Each of them has a set amount of mount points. Each of them have different capacities for carrying fuel. Because you will need to actually keep an eye on your fuel for this to work. Yeah, what else is there that's kind of cool? Yeah,
some of them are more maneuverable than others.
Yeah, let's see. You'll probably need to buy insurance for your scale. Otherwise, you may end up broke.
Yeah.
So that's going to be.
Also, they can go between battle and vehicular forms.
Yeah, so. And you'll be able to also if you upgrade them far enough, you'll probably be able to find flight modules and stuff to do.
Yep.
And then you can start to see that very, very far draw distance that is supposedly not possible on the Wii U.
Yeah. you can also, because of this system means, there's also going to be flight fights in the air.
Yeah.
The battle system for this game is just incredible. It builds on the battle system for the original Xenoblade. And sort of adds to it. The cool thing about the actual mech suits is that if one character in the party equips one, it ups the defense for all the people in the party. Also, you won't necessarily have to worry about replacing limbs or anything for the mech suits, because after a battle's over, it regenerates its own limbs. Afterwards, yeah. So you at least don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, and you can get you can regain some fuel by just hopping out of the mech.
Just let it recharge itself. Stuff for a bit.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, the tutorial. If they do have an in-game tutorial for this thing, it's probably going to be at least half an hour.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the tutorial is just those videos.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you've actually seen the trailers, it looks incredible.
Yeah, it really does.
And remember, this is a Wii U game,
I'm still also, like I was telling Brandon earlier on. I'm still perplexed by the way that they're handling the the fast loading of this game, because it doesn't really. It seems like something Nintendo would definitely do, and something that probably shouldn't be done.
Well, from what I read, it seems there is apparently a noticeable difference when you do it with just the disc and not have the packs loaded with it.
Yeah, but I mean, you have the disc. Why not just have the thing installed? I mean, it's not that
I'm wondering
hard.
If it's something they have to add to the actual system software that they just couldn't put on the disc for some reason.
Yeah,
maybe they reached capacity with the actual disc, with the games themselves, and they had to add the other stuff.
Yeah, I suspect you're going to need an external hard drive, though.
Might. That's all right, though.
Yeah. How big is the install?
That's the thing. There's four packs. So you can start downloading them now, actually. So,
what do they add up to? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Does Nintendo still count the storage in blocks, or are they actually do they actually tell you megabytes now?
I haven't looked recently. I'll have to look.
Yeah, because that was weird.
Yeah. Just a reminder, folks, Xenoblade Chronicles X comes out in exactly 3 weeks.
Yep.
So we will...
go and get that special edition.
Oh, yeah. I guess now we can just sort of talk about why... I wanted just sort of... because like I mentioned earlier, I've been playing the original Xenoblade... a little bit.
Yeah, I know, and Pat played a lot of that too, so.
Yeah. Pat, when you played a lot of, what was your opinion of it?
I didn't play a lot of Xenoblade.
No.
I played a little bit. There were so many things coming out around that time that I just got pulled in all directions and never got back to it.
No.
Well, of the little bit you played, then. Because I've actually played the whole game to completion, so...
I probably should, like... I probably should just start knocking it out as soon as I... as soon as I get done with Trails in the Sky SC.
Yeah.
One of the things I will say about this game is that the... just start off with the battle system. The battle system is basically... It has kind of that sort of MMO-type quality to it, but it's a lot more involved than that. It's not just, you know, you standing back and then occasionally clicking a button. There's a lot of, like, strategy involved, involving, you know, placement of your party members, charging stuff up, you know, things like, you know, the weapon that the main character carries, you know, the Monado, it actually has a thing where it'll actually let you, if a character is near to death, it'll actually show you the attack that the enemy is going to use to take out that particular character, so you can actually, you know,
block it or
you know, move the character out of the way, do something, you know. A lot of stuff charging up, a lot of... It's kind of hard to describe. You have to kind of experience it yourself.
A lot of timing events from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, a lot of that. Also, it had a fantastic voice cast, too. It just did. It had that all-British voice cast, and it just sounded great when you played it.
Have they retained that for the...
They're actually getting a multi... I think they're actually going to get a bunch of different... groups to do the voice this time, so though considering it's supposed to be like the whole planet Earth is probably going to be bits of, you know,
multi-ethnic.
Also, just, you know, of course the music for that game was incredible. And the visuals, just, you know, if you looked at the visuals too closely, you could see, you know, some of the textures and stuff were a little off, a little low grade, but if you step back and just looked at it, it looked incredible.
Yeah, so, like, I heard a lot of people saying that it looked like a PS3 game.
Mm-hmm, it did. If you actually, and also let's keep this in mind, this is the game that more or less redeemed my faith in JRPGs. That made me think that this was a genre of games that was still very much viable. It did, you know, it brought, like, very open world aspects to the game. Technically it's not true open world, because, you know, there are parts where you have to go through loading screens and stuff with different areas.
Yeah.
But what it is those areas were these huge wide open spaces.
Yeah.
Where you could pretty much do anything you wanted. You know, you could follow the story, or you could go and, you know, level up your character, find hidden items and stuff, explore, do side quests, all that stuff. It's basically and, you know, story-wise, it has an incredible story, and, you know, some of it comes completely out of left field. Obviously, the story from the beginning is already kind of weird, considering, you know, the whole thing takes place on these two giant, I guess, robots, for lack of a better word. One that's all organic, one that's all mechanical. And, you know, you have to, like, and they're, like, permanently locked in sort of this thing with their swords connecting. And so you hop on the swords to get from one of them to the other. And, you know, and of course, the thing with JRPGs, as everybody knows, is that the last third, the story usually just goes off the rails on a crazy train into crazy town. And that definitely happens here.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, you find out what these robots actually are, why they're there. You know, some friends become enemies, enemies become friends.
Yeah.
That type of thing. But it was an incredible game. And, you know, fortunately now you can get it fairly easily for the new 3DS. So
yeah,
you can get, unlike, you know, back when it was just Wii and you could only get it at GameStop.
Yeah.
And for the record, that is the one game, one of the handful of games at GameStop that have not gone down in price at all.
Yeah.
some cases has actually gone up.
Yeah, it's you know, I saw it on sale at Video Games Plus the other day. It was $80
mm-hmm.
on sale.
Yep. But it is one of those games that you absolutely have to play. It is genuinely a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Completely redeemed the JRPG genre in my eyes.
Yeah.
And remember, we almost didn't get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was the story behind that? How did we end up actually receiving it instead of getting...
That was Operation Rainfall.
Hmm.
Basically, a group of people online made such a stink to Nintendo that they finally decided to release it here in the U.S.
Yep.
That's pretty much the whole story right there.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yep.
Hmm. So, yeah.
And for a while there, it seemed like that wasn't going to work.
But it turned out that it did. And mm-hmm. Now not only, you know, did you get Xenoblade on the Wii, now it's Chronicles X is, I'd say, one of Nintendo's leading holiday titles.
Yep.
I'd say it's what they're pinning their holiday on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That and
Mario Maker and...
And that... That Smash Splatoon bundle,
mm-hmm.
which is a brilliant marketing.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Smash, you know, the hero of Xenoblade Chronicles is on that game. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
He also has his own amiibo, too. So
yeah. Lots of amiibos going on.
The game definitely found its alliance, found its audience,
yeah.
apparently. So. It's paid off for him in the end.
Yeah.
All right, Pat, this one's yours.
No, actually, I'm the one that put this in there.
That one's yours, Phil? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this last story we have here is, you know, if you're familiar with the Vocaloid character, she's a pop star in Japan, Hatsune Miku.
Mm-hmm.
Basically a hologram performer, and she did, I think on, what was it, Conan O'Brien she appeared on?
No, she
was Letterman.
Letterman. One of his last shows.
Yeah. So she
Before
showed up
Colbert
there.
Colbert took over.
Yeah. Well, now if you've ever wanted to see one of her shows, you're going to get the chance, because she's going to be touring North America.
I mean, I know she did sort of a small tour here a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, this is her first like major one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
no, this whole thing just made me realize that, you know, Macross Plus really did predict the future.
Fiona Apple.
That's
yeah.
true.
Mm.
That was a good anime, by the way.
Oh yeah, it is. It's an incredible one. But yeah, if you've ever gone on YouTube and seen that that video of her performing World Is Mine in front of that audience, I think it was at the Budokan.
Yeah. That's a big venue for a projector.
Yeah. She's a surprisingly charismatic, you know, hologram, so.
Yeah, well, just think about the amount of talent that has to go into something like that. The animators have to basically
yeah.
look at every single detail. Yes, it's Vocaloid, but somebody has to sing that in the back beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot going on there.
They got a whole band behind her. It's
yeah, there's really a lot of cool stuff. A lot of if you're you know a tech nerd, this is something you probably should check out, because you know there's a lot of really cool imaging, projection, audio, and all that fun stuff technology mm-hmm. that goes into this show. You know, if she ever ends up coming around my way, I probably am going to go and take a look.
Yeah.
Seems like it's worth it, even though it's not really my style of music. It's just for
it's
the show.
Not, it's not mine either, but I would definitely go see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you see it, Pat?
Assuming convenience, yeah.
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 Hmm.
If I'd go see it, but, you know, she'd have... The thing is, where I live, you know.
Exactly. Like I said, assuming convenience.
Yeah.
If it did,
exactly
I'd probably
what I'm talking
have
about.
To. You know, if she did, I'd probably have to drive all the way out to Atlanta, because that's probably the only place she'd play out, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Florida, whichever's closer.
Yeah. That makes me wonder how she's going to be, you know, received in America, though.
Well, she's got a following. I mean, the Hatsune Miku games sell pretty well here.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a following all over the world.
Yeah.
But, like, how is... But, you know, she's still a niche over here, so...
Yeah. I don't think so.
No, she's not, she's not, like, Lady Gaga or anything, but...
No.
No, I don't think that's what they're going for.
No.
No. It just makes me wonder how the mainstream media is going to receive it.
That's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because some of them are just going to be absolutely baffled by it.
Yeah. It's like, I can just kind of see the headline right now. Hologram from Japan entertains a small group of people.
Yeah.
That's going to be the cynical headlines that start being written.
Yeah. Well, that's inevitable.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's coming.
If you want to get realistic coverage of it, look at the tech news.
Yeah.
They're the ones who will be representing this correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always wondered what it was particular, because there's, like, how many Vocaloids in total? Like, 5 or 6 of them?
No.
Oh, there's quite a few. Man.
Yeah. But why
it's like
was
a whole
it,
genre in Japan.
Yeah, I know it's like a whole genre, but why was it this one in particular?
Mm-hmm. Character.
Yeah, this one particular basically. Character that took off, because they've all got characters.
Yeah.
I think, was it because, you know...
Designated the, headliner.
Well, that, maybe, I think maybe it had something to do with the fact that, you know, she was the primary Vocaloid used by, you know, Supercell. Mm. So, you know, for that first album.
Yeah.
So I'm probably... That might be the reason.
Yeah.
By the way, just for the record, Supercell is amazing J-pop, if you ever get a chance to hear it.
Yeah.
Check
YouTube. Yeah. There's plenty of it up there.
Yeah. If you watch that anime Guilty Crown, they did the soundtrack for that.
Yeah.
So, of course, they don't... Supercell doesn't use Vocaloids anymore. They have an actual singers for their stuff now, but it's still amazing.
Yeah.
She's heading over here, and she's not sticking just to, you know, anime conventions either. She's actually going to be doing it, like, you know...
Arenas
and, you know, probably theaters, too.
Yep.
It's going to be pretty... If it does make its way over here, I'm definitely going to go see it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that'd be a pretty amazing show.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, it's just the way that... If you've actually seen that that video I was talking about, you know, it's not just... They don't treat it like a novelty. They treat it like it's an actual concert, and they're singing along and everything, waving glow sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really awesome to watch to watch it take place.
Yeah, it takes a lot of talent to make a projection that charismatic.
Yeah.
You know.
And clearly they respect what goes into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, looks like we've pretty much run out of show.
Yep.
Yeah.
That went to some weird places.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we usually do here.
It's true.
Normal service will be removed on Sunday when I actually... Resumed on Sunday when I actually, managed to record the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely be going into the Nintendo Direct some more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few key things to talk about there.
Holy
like
hell, that was a good Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, then, this has been Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for my friends Phil and Pat, we all want to say, go home, you're drunk.
See ya.
Bye-bye.